Today is April 21st, 2010. Our guest is David Icke, right here on the Intel Hub. He'll be talking a little bit about his book, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, The Lion Sleeps No More. Of course, his website is davidicke.com. He really needs no introduction. He's a former professional soccer player, a journalist, network anchorman for the BBC. He's written scores of books, and we're just pleased to have him here on the Intel Hub. David Icke, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be on the show. And if I talk a little bit, if you like, to start with about my new book, it's the biggest work I've ever done. It's nearly 700 pages, 355,000 words, and 325 illustrations, and 32 pages of original artwork. And it's a massive work of dot connecting, because that's really what I've been doing this almost exactly 20 years now. It's you can look at a situation or a subject in isolation, and it can be interesting and fascinating, and there can be questions about what's going on and why is this happening. But once you start connecting the dots between apparently, on the face of it, unconnected people, events, situations, and subjects, you suddenly start to see the picture. It's like when you are doing a jigsaw puzzle, once you get the frame in place, in other words, in this case, the structure through which the few can control the many, then you can start putting the pieces in. And of course, like a jigsaw puzzle, the more pieces you put in, the quicker you can put the pieces in, because you can start to see where they go. And that's really where it's got now after 20 years. But there's a lot of new stuff in the book. And I look at what I call Rothschild Zionism very closely in part of it, because, you know, people totally misunderstand in general. And I understand why they misunderstand. It's because they're given a false story from cradle to grave. They misunderstand what Zionism is. In the book, I call it Rothschild Zionism all the way through, to emphasize the creator of it and the controller of it ever since. Zionism is nothing whatsoever to do with benefiting or anything else with regard to Jewish people as a whole. It's not Rothschild Jewish people. It's Rothschild Zionism. And what you realize is how many Jewish people reject Zionism. But what the Rothschilds have done brilliantly is get the association between the two absolutely fast in the public mind. So when you're talking about Zionism, you're talking about the Jewish people. When you're talking about the manipulation that Rothschild Zionism does, you're saying that it's a Jewish plot. And this is how they've done it very well. And they've got organizations like the Anti-Defamation League and B'nai B'rith, Rothschild Zionist fronts completely, created and controlled by them, to target anyone who gets too close to uncovering the truth. So there's a heck of a lot about that in part of the book, and then it runs on through, and you realize just how massively Rothschild Zionism influences world banking, the world entertainment industry, global politics. And you also understand why when you have a country like Israel doing the appalling things, horrific things it's doing to the Palestinian population, the American authorities, the British authorities, the European authorities basically look the other way. Any other country in the world, there would be an outcry. There would be calls for sanctions. There would be called for many, many things to be done to stop what was going on. But because it's Israel, controlled by the House of Rothschild, the American administration, Republican or Democrat, controlled by the House of Rothschild, they look the other way. And this is also why when you've got a country like Israel that basically has an economy and a standard of living along with countries like Spain, that enormous, fantastic amounts of money are given every year by the American government to Israel, and that sliver of land we call Israel, has the biggest F-16 fleet outside America, provided by the American government and the American military. And you go, if you don't understand what's going on, why would they do that? Well, they do that because America is one arm of the Rothschilds, Israel's another arm of the Rothschilds, Britain's another arm of the Rothschilds, and so basically they're handing money and military weaponry from this hand to this hand, you know, in the same network. So there's a lot about that in the book.
Oh, wow, absolutely. Now, I was also reading into on your website, and it talks about the Moon Matrix. Can you describe that to us a little bit?
Well, the reason that the book is nearly 700 pages long is because it covers so many different subjects, including the nature of reality itself. And it's only by understanding that that we can truly understand how the control system is 24/7 influencing the thoughts and perceptions of the human population. And what's happened over the years, and like I say, it's 20 years at the end of March the 31st this year, a few days ago, that it all started for me, consciously started for me. And over the years, I have experienced a recurring pattern, and it is this. I get this overwhelming feeling, knowing, it just engulfs me that a situation is in a certain way. And after that, suddenly, information, documents, books, experiences, people I meet, relating to that subject, confirm to me that initial feeling, that initial knowing, through what I call five sense information, names, dates, places, scientific background, etc. And this has happened so many times, and I recognize it very clearly now. And while I was writing this book, I was sitting at this chair that I'm sitting at now, and I just got this overwhelming, massive feeling that the moon was not what we thought it was, that it was a construct of some sort, very probably a hollowed out planetoid by a race that is light years technologically ahead of where we are in the public arena. And people, you know, when they hear this sort of stuff I'm going to talk about now and other things, what they need to remember is that what is possible for humans to do now, in the public arena anyway, because it's much the technological possibility is much further ahead in the secret projects, but in the public arena, it's not the cutting edge of scientific knowledge. It's not the cutting edge of technological possibility. It is nowhere near, my goodness, the cutting edge. And if we perceive what it's possible by what we can do now, then we're going to completely lose the plot, because that's not what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, in the background, behind the Illuminati families that we talk about, behind this, if you like, human network of families and secret societies, there is a non-human race that has been manipulating humanity for eons. And they are technologically much further advanced, massively further advanced. And so I got this overwhelming feeling that the moon was not what we thought it was, and it was some kind of probably hollowed out planetoid and inside, not on the moon, although, you know, you've only got to go on the internet to see the way NASA moon photographs have been smudged out. Absolutely. And covered over to stop us seeing what's actually on the surface in terms of non-natural phenomena. But it's in the moon. It's in the moon. That's where it's coming from. And what happened then is, suddenly, I went on the internet immediately, and I thought, the moon's not real. Why am I getting this so strong? And I went on, and I just put some keywords in, and not expecting anything, to be honest, and up came a book called Who Built the Moon? By two researchers who've written other books as well, looking at the extraordinary anomalies in the moon and to the moon, and pointing out that really, when you put it all together, it has to be a non-natural phenomena. And this sort of information then started coming from many other different angles. I'd come across other books, I'd come across articles and what have you, and I'd meet people. And then I came across these two Russian scientists from the Soviet Academy of Science who wrote an article, a very lengthy and comprehensive article, in Sputnik magazine in the 1970s, saying the moon is a hollowed out planetoid. It's a construct by an advanced, technologically advanced non-human race. And when you start looking at these various questions about the moon, it's extraordinary. You know, we're born and we look at the world as it is when, we become conscious in the world. And we kind of take things for granted. Well, this is how it is, isn't it? But when you start to ask questions, you realize actually how much or how little you knew about something you've taken for granted. So we look at the moon, and the moon comes out at night and all the rest of it. It goes through its phases and all, what have you. And, of course, it's the moon. It's always been there. Well, when you start looking at it in a different light, you find that there are so many questions about it that point to the fact that there's so much more to know than we currently do. These authors of who built the moon, they said the moon is bigger than it should be, apparently older than it should be, and much lighter in mass than it should be. It occupies an unlikely orbit and is so extraordinary that all existing explanations for its presence are fraught with difficulties, and none of them could be considered remotely watertight. The thing is that science has not a clue how the moon got there. What you see with science all the time, and I research a lot of this, so I see it constantly. A scientist will have a theory about how something is or how something happened. And then, after a while, that theory morphs into scientific fact, but then when you go back, it's a theory and it doesn't work either. For instance, they say the moon was formed when a Mars size type planet hit the Earth. A great chunk of the Earth broke off and it became the moon, and they call it the whack theory. But then when the science and physics of that didn't work out, they came up with the double whack theory, and that is that this Mars-type planet whacked the Earth and then came back and had another smack. It's like, oh, I'll give you one, I'll come back and give you another. And the fact is they have no idea how the moon came into existence. There was a Russian professor of biochemistry, Isaac Asimov, who did a lot of study with regard to the moon, and this was his summary. We cannot help but come to the conclusion that the moon by rights ought not to be there. The fact that it is one of those strokes of luck almost too good to accept. Small planets such as Earth with weak gravitational fields might well lack satellites. In general, then, when a planet does have satellites, those satellites are much smaller than the planet itself. Therefore, he said, even if the Earth has a satellite, there would be every reason to suspect that at best it would be a tiny world, perhaps 30 miles in diameter. But that is not so. Earth not only has a satellite, but it is a giant satellite, 2,160 miles in diameter. How is it then that tiny Earth has one? Amazing. Another a scientist, a guy called Irwin Shapiro of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, said, looking at all the anomalies and unanswerable questions with regard to the moon, he said the best explanation for the moon is observational error. It doesn't actually exist. And so I put all this together in the book and much more besides to point out that, you know, the evidence is there for the moon not being a natural phenomenon that we think it is. And actually, if you want to put it in simple terms, it's a gigantic, what people might call spaceship, but you know, it's not like the space shuttle. This is technology and knowledge and understanding of reality light years away, ahead of where we are. And when I then picked up the phone, I spoke to my great friend Credo Mutwa. And Credo Mutwa is a very, very famous and renowned shaman in the Zulu nation in South Africa. And he is the official historian of the Zulu nation. He's the carrier of the knowledge, the ancient knowledge, if you like. And I have found over the years that the Zulu legends, the Zulu, quote, myths, are incredibly accurate if you break down the symbolism into what they're really saying. And I called Credo Mutwa, and I said to him, not that I've found all this stuff about the moon, you know, what do you think? I simply said to him, Credo, tell me any Zulu legends about the moon. Are there any? What do they say? And he said that immediately that the legends say that the moon was brought here hundreds of generations ago by two brothers, Wawani and Mpanku. Uh-huh. Now, these break down, of course, these are other names for what the Sumerians used to call Enlil and Enki of the non-human race they record in their ancient tablets called the Anunnaki. And he said that these two brothers, Credo, Wawani and Mpanku, were leaders of a reptilian race. They were known as the Water Brothers and had, he quotes, scaly skin like a fish. Now, Enki, in the Sumerian text, is known as associated very much with water, as a water god. And the Zulu legends say that Wawani and Mpanku stole the moon in the form of an egg from the great fire dragon. And listen to this, emptied out the yolk until it was hollow.
Oh, wow.
They then rolled the moon across the sky to the earth, and when it arrived, it caused cataclysmic events on the planet because, of course, we are held as a planet in our angle of spin, if you like, by influence from the moon. Now, interestingly, I also go into detail in the book. He talks about there the emptying out the yolk of the symbolic egg, moon egg. Well, when you look at the scientific stuff again, you find that there is tremendous evidence that the moon is actually hollow. And one of the things that has been pointed out by some scientists is that the moon is inside out. That's one of the quotes that I use in the book. The moon is inside out because what's on the surface should be inside. And again, when you look at the reaction of the moon when it's been hit by very powerful missiles, if you like, of various kinds, including ones produced by NASA to impact the moon, the moon reacts as if it's hollow. For instance, scientists have said that when the moon was hit by one massive blow, that it wobbled in such a precise way, quote, almost as though it had gigantic hydraulic damper struts inside it. They say rang like a bell, or reacted like a gong. You know, in other words, that massive amounts of the moon are hollow. And those Zulu legends talk about the moon being broken up into compartments, each compartment has a different job to do, carries different kinds of genetics and what have you. And the moon has been used to hijack the Earth and manipulate us. And the next stage of it, which I go into in the book in detail in a chapter called The Moon Matrix, I talk about how there was genetic manipulation, which is well documented in the ancient texts and accounts all over the world. And that genetic manipulation was to tune the human brain, human genetics, into the broadcasts coming from the moon that are feeding humanity a false reality 24/7. And what I've understood as this book has been produced, and I go into it in detail in the text and in the illustrations, is that the black holes, and they found one at the center of this galaxy, of course, the black holes emit a vibration. And this vibration goes through a cycle over a vast period of what we call time. As this vibration goes through its cycle, it changes. As it changes, it is changing the nature of the energy, the photon information, that is being emitted by the suns, in our case, of course, our sun. And this operates like, in the same way as the wireless internet. You know, you can sit in the middle of a city with a laptop, and you can have no wire connection to anything, and yet you can pull the World Wide Web, the collective reality of the World Wide Web, out of nowhere, out of the unseen, and you can put it on your screen. Well, what the human body computer, as I call it, is doing is pulling information in the unseen, in the vibrational level of our reality, what I call the metaphysical universe, the waveform information construct in the form of things, of photons and information. And it's turning it into this reality in our heads that is the same principle as if you tune a computer or log a computer into the internet anywhere in the world, in China, in America, in Europe, in South Africa, you will get the same collective reality on your screen, except, and this is very, very relevant, except in places like China. Because what they do in China is they firewall off the computer system so that they cannot access vast amounts of the collective reality we call the internet that other people in the rest of the world has and can do. What I suggested in the book very strongly and backed it up is that the moon matrix does to the photon energy coming from the sun what the Chinese authorities have done to the computer system in China. They have hacked into it, and we are no longer perceiving the scale of reality and the breadth of reality that humans once did. And this is why the range of frequency called visible light, that is the only range of frequency that we can access with our five senses, if you like, and our sight, is unbelievably tiny and narrow. As someone once said, quite rightly, you know, if the band of frequency that we can perceive was any smaller, we'd be blind because it's so tiny. And I say this has been artificially created by this moon matrix. And the more that I understand, the more a movie I came across so long ago now, it was a kind of a secondary movie produced, and everything else on it, I think even the music, was produced by a guy called John Carpenter. And the movie was called They Live. And for people who haven't come across it, if you go on YouTube and go put John Carpenter, They Live in, you can watch it in sections. I really recommend it because it's becoming more accurate all the time. I mean, I could see how accurate it was quite a long time ago in certain areas. Now I can see how it's tremendously accurate, too, in the area I'm talking about, because this is what the movie was about. It was set sometime in the future from when it actually came out, and that future was about now. That future time was about now. There was a massive economic recession, was set in America, and there were people living in tent and corrugated iron makeshift homes on pieces of wasteland. I mean, it's happening, mate, isn't it? Across the road from one of these camps, makeshift camps, was a church. And a guy came along looking for work in the building industry, and he was living in one of these with these camps, and he started seeing activity at this church, and he got interested in it. And then there was a police raid on this church. And oh, another thing that happened is that someone was breaking in to the broadcasts of mainstream television with an interception broadcast saying, basically, we're being controlled by them. And the police, police stroke military, raided this church and ransacked and destroyed this settlement next to it. And the guy I'm talking about, the builder, he got away from it and then came back the next day. And he started searching around the church, finding out what was going on. And he found these boxes, two boxes. So he got them and he went away with them into a back street. And he opened up one of the boxes, and in it were sunglasses. And he didn't understand this at all. And he took a pair of sunglasses and threw the rest in the tip because he thought, well, it's just useless. It's just sunglasses. He then walks into the main sort of thoroughfare with the shops and everything and the cars and the traffic, and he puts these glasses on. Suddenly he can see what are to the naked eye advertisements for travel or any advertisement you can think of, food, clothing, and what have you. Through the glasses he can now see subliminal messages where the adverts were: obey, don't question authority, and all these things. And he then goes to a newsstand and he picks up some magazines, you know, the equivalent of Newsweek and Time. And he's with the naked eye, he's seeing pictures and texts and articles. With the glasses on, he's seeing don't question authority, obey, and all these subliminal messages. A guy then comes along to buy a newspaper, and through the glasses, this guy's not human anymore. He takes the glasses down, looks at him with his eyes, he's human. And he walks around the city, and he starts to realize that. And he looks at a television. He sees a speech by the president through the glasses. He sees the president's not actually human. So it's a non-human form hiding behind human form. And he starts to see that significant numbers of people, far, far, far from everybody, but significant numbers of people are actually not human when you look at them through the glasses. Anyway, what happens eventually is he realizes with an accomplice, a supporter, a helper of his, that what's happening is from the tower of the television station, a signal is being broadcast which is influencing the perception of the population so that they cannot see that they're being controlled by a non-human race, because they can't pick up that frequency. But the glasses have been designed in the movie script to override that, so you can see what you would normally see without this broadcast. They then get to the top of this tower at the end of the movie, and they smash it and break it and stop it broadcasting, and suddenly, all over, people are sitting in bars, and suddenly the person next to them is no longer human, and they can see it with their naked eye now. There's two newsreaders reading the news. Suddenly they're not human on the telly. President goes non-human. And I say, and I back it up with a lot of detailed evidence in the book, that dish on the top of that television tower in the movie is actually what is coming from the moon. The moon is broadcasting a frequency which is affecting fundamentally our ability to perceive reality. And the servants of the moon matrix, as I call it, on Earth, are the Illuminati families. Now, this is another point that comes into this. The moon matrix, like everything else, broadcasts on a certain frequency, has a certain frequency range. If it's going to influence human perception, receiver transmission frequencies must be within that moon matrix. And so society has been structured to put people in fear, in stress, in forms of hatred, guilt, frustration, all these emotions that, of course, the system elicits from us all the time, are within the frequency range of the moon matrix. And the idea is to hold us in that so that we become its, basically, its computer terminals. And what is beginning to happen is people are starting to awaken from that previous state of consciousness, if you like, that suppressed state of consciousness. And as they do so, they're withdrawing, not overnight, but they're slowly but surely starting to withdraw their connection to that moon matrix in the way they did before. Now, one of the biggest connections to it is through what we call the reptilian brain, the R complex, as scientists call it. And as they do so, the influence of that moon matrix is getting less and less powerful upon them. And as that happens, they're starting to see and perceive things that they didn't see before. And this is what's happening with this increasingly obvious awakening around the world of increasing numbers, vastly increasing numbers of people who are starting to see themselves and the world in a completely different way. It's because the influence of this moon matrix, this fake reality we're being fed, is losing its power as we awaken to another level of consciousness, therefore another frequency that doesn't connect with this moon matrix like our previous state of being did. And what I find interesting too, because all these movies are so symbolic, these people control Hollywood, is that in the Matrix movies, of course, people laid back in those seats, and there was something inserted in the back of their brain, the back of their heads, and that connected them to the Matrix, if you remember. Well, that's the reptilian brain where that thing went in. And I say that that is where, overwhelmingly, we are connected to the moon matrix. And I would also say that the reptilian brain, the R complex, where we get our emotional reactions from, our survival reactions from, fight or flight and all these things, we get in a real emotional mess when we're dominated by the reptilian brain. I say that the fundamental part of the genetic manipulation that the ancients talk about was manipulating the dominance of the reptilian brain upon the human brain. And it was basically, if you break it down into computer parlance, and it's very relevant that we should when you look at it, the way the body works, the reptilian brain is like a giant microchip which is connected, or receiver, transmitter, microchip, whatever you want to call it, which is designed to pick up the moon matrix and feed us this false reality.
Wow, absolutely riveting information, David. Getting into the title of your book, I found that very interesting, and I'm wondering if that's relating to this mass awakening that you're talking about, and I myself have actually noticed. Human race, get off your knees. Lion sleeps no more. What inspired you to title your new book that?
Well, the first book I ever wrote after my initial conscious awakening, if you like, 20 years ago, was actually called The Truth Vibrations. And I called it that because even in those early days, very early days, I was picking up a very clear theme. And that is that a vibrational change was coming, and it was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock that was going to wake up the human race from its amnesia, its coma that it's been put in. And I say it's been put in that coma by the moon matrix. Now, as the years passed, I have more and more symbolized these truth vibrations, as I call them, this awakening vibrational change, as a lion. And so the lion symbolism in the book is multi-leveled. On one level, I'm symbolizing the lion as these truth vibrations that are acting like the awakening spiritual alarm clock. But on another level, it's symbolic of the true human emerging. The human race getting off its knees, ceasing to be a sheep, and to become the lion, the control of our own reality that we once were and are in the process of becoming again. Because what's happening at the moment is, as I said earlier, through the black holes, a resonance comes that is the base frequency of our reality at any point. But it's not doesn't just stay like that. It goes through a cycle in which this vibration changes as it goes symbolically in a circle and then comes back to the original. So what happens as a result of that is as this cycle unfolds, there are times of awakening and there are times of suppression. And in the greater scheme of things, what we're experiencing here is a cosmic game. It's for consciousness to experience different situations and to play with reality. And you can come in at a certain point on the cycle and you can experience a great suppression, what you might call the dark time. Or you can come in at another time and if you're of the right vibrational state that can sync with it, what the ancients have called the golden age. They all talk about that. Well, that golden age was a period of this cycle unfolding, and then it goes into another cycle. And we are now at the cusp of moving out of the really dark period, the darkest period in the cycle, into a great new cycle of awakening, of love, of balance, of the end of manipulation, the end of the malevolence, the end of the devious nature of the society that we've been living in. And we're living through this cusp. And as a result, there are those that are tuning into this awakening energy, what I call the truth vibrations, and they're starting to transform dramatically the way they see themselves in the world and world events. There are others who are still tuned to the old vibration because we're in the process where one's replacing the other, but the two still available at this time. And this is where what I talk about in my books and my talks about the parting of the ways, the fork in the road, where we've been given the choice. Are we going to go down that road to the true amazing nature of who we really are? You know, genius, who've forgotten we're genius. Infinite possibility, who've forgotten we're infinite possibility, who think we're Joe Bloggs and Ethel Smith. Or are we going to continue down this track, this fork in the road, in which case it's going to be a very, very dark road indeed for people that take that road, because they're just going to go into a point where not only into a very unpleasant experiences, but in the end experiences that lead to total destruction, because if the energy they're tuned to is being replaced by another one and they can't tune to the other one because of their state of being, they're still in hatred and fear and all this stuff, well, they can't exist in this reality anymore, because the energy or the information construct that they are connected to is no longer going to exist in this reality, because we're going into this new cycle. And people have talked about things about the age of Aquarius. They talk about 2012 and the Great Transformation. I think the old 2012 thing is a diversion. And we shouldn't get too focused on that, because these guys are going to manipulate 2012 for their own ends. But what is absolutely true is by 2012, these vibrational changes will be more powerful than they are now in 2013, 2014, even more, 2016, even more. And we're now going into a period, and I can see it so clearly as I observe the world and even the community in the town where I live. There is this dramatic division starting to be so blatantly clear between what I call the schism people, those that are tuned to the old cycle, and these awakening people that are tuning to the new cycle that's now very, very fast emerging. And it's no accident, you see, that it's as this is happening that the Illuminati and those guys in the moon are now at this point of all points throwing everything at us in terms of Orwellian control, manipulating us through food and drink, manipulating us through electromagnetic pollution, manipulating us through misinformation, through fear, through surveillance, and they want the microchip in there, the food and the drink that imbalance the receiver transmitter of the human body computer, just as the microchips are desired to be implanted in humans to externally manipulate their vibrational state, therefore what they can tune to. What they're trying to do, it seems as if they're looking for total control. And on one level, yes, I guess they are. But the real reason we're seeing all this being thrown at us now so fast is they're panicking like heck because they're trying to keep people in a vibrational state that will hold them in the moon matrix and will stop them taking the truth vibrations route out of this situation that we're facing. So they are trying to hold people more, and as the truth vibrations express themselves, obviously they've got to do more to stop people accessing that and being affected and influenced and awakened by it. And so they're throwing all this external and technological stuff at us to try to hold us in this fake reality when the truth vibrations are offering the route out of it. And that is a major reason, I would say, for HAARP. There are many things that HAARP is being used for. It's being used to create earthquakes. It's being used to create volcanoes. It's being used for many things. But one of the things it's being used for is to affect externally and technologically the vibrational state of the energy field that we're living in. Because, you know, if you can control the energy field that we live in, then you can massively influence and control human perception. You know, as I've said many times before, how do you affect all the fish at the same time? You affect the sea. That's how you do it. And they are doing it through the energy sea, which is basically the magnetic field that we live in and exist in. They're constantly manipulating that. That's why they're manipulating the ley line system of the Earth's magnetic energy grid by putting things like nuclear power stations on major vortex points on that grid. Why they put standing stone circles and pyramids in certain ways in the ancient world. It's to manipulate and suppress that grid because that affects human awareness by suppressing that the amount of awareness that is available to us. So once you get your jigsaw pieces in place so that you've got the structure in which they do it and what they're trying to do, it completely starts to pull in to one jigsaw puzzle, one massive connected dots, all these various elements and subjects that people are now researching. Everything from food additives to HAARP to microchips to the Orwellian surveillance in the police state. It's all part of what I've been talking about today.
Absolutely. I mean, you explained that beautifully, David, and that makes perfect sense. Getting into the Illuminati and what we possibly might expect in the future. Now, I myself have been going through, I mean, we go through all sorts of information like that here at the Intel Hub. Lately, we've been going through these NLE 10 documents, National Level Exercise 10. I've been going through nuclear preparedness documents and all sorts of stuff. And what I've been noticing, the general trend within the documents and through the FEMA community and Department of Homeland Security, etc., is that they are talking about what's called INDs, improvised nuclear devices. And I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, what's going to be the next part of their plan to try and totally bring us into control? Do you have any outlook on what we might be expecting in the near future?
Well, again, this fits into what we've been talking about so far, because if you are in a state of harmony and the world is in a state of harmony, then you have the ability to quite easily open yourself up to these higher levels of awareness that are pouring into this reality now. So they don't want us in a state of harmony. They want us in a state of total fear, terror. They want a state of chaos so that we are so focused on survival or the perception of survival and the need to survive financially in terms of food, in terms of physical survival with wars and terror and all this stuff, that is our focus. And, you know, and is that line, which is so true, flows where attention goes. And so they want our attention on these low vibrational states of emotion through the chaos and the trauma that they are planning to unleash, and indeed are unleashing, because it's about holding us in a low vibrational state, which is why it's so important when we begin to understand this, that we observe what's going on in the world. We do what we believe is necessary to make a contribution to what is necessary to be done, but we don't get emotionally attached to it. Because if we do, we get pulled in vibrationally, and that's what they want. It's not about being cold. Absolutely not. You know, I've done what I've done in the last 20 years because I'm so disgusted with what's going on in the world and how people are treated, not least children. But it's a version of don't get mad, get even. And it's not about getting even. It's not about retribution. But you know what I mean by the thought of that. Don't get mad. Do what is bloody necessary. Don't get emotionally caught in fear and all the rest of it. Just do what is calmly, do what is necessary to sort it out. And what that is for us in vast numbers to stop cooperating with our own enslavement. Because they want to cull the human population. They want to cull it massively in the period coming up now. Why do they want to do that? Because they, in number, are a fraction of human numbers. They can only manipulate humanity in the vast numbers that we are compared with the manipulators if they can get significant numbers of the manipulated to be middlemen and women for the manipulators, i.e. men in dark suits, men in uniform, administrators, and what have you. And if they can get the majority of the population to acquiesce to authority, which is the few. And if we acquiesce to authority, well, it's the law, mate, so we better obey it. Well, okay, well, let me just take you through a scenario, okay? I'm going to change the law because I can, because I control the bloody Congress and the Capitol Hill and the Houses of Parliament. And I'm going to make it a law that I can take your children away whenever I like. And we're very close to that because it's happening. If you follow the stories on my website and many other websites about the way the state is stealing children from parents, from good parents, genuine parents, for the spurious reasons. So I'm going to change the law. I'm going to make it legal for any of people from the government, the social services, come and take your children away whenever we like. Okay? Are you going to obey that law when they come
Absolutely
take your children?
Not.
No. So then I say to these people, so there is a line then that where you won't obey the law just because it's the law. So what we need to do is move that bloody line a bit further along and stop acquiescing with anything that is about the enslavement of humanity and about taking our basic freedoms away and dictating to us in a fascist way. Because in the great poem by Shelley that I quote in the book, and I had come to the title of the book and the cover of the book before I actually came across this this poem, and it was so magnificent. And the last four lines say, "Rise like lions after slumber in unvanquishable number. Shake your chains to earth like dew, which in sleep had fallen on you." Five lines, and this is the last one. "Ye are many, they are few." And that's the whole point. And that's why they want this cull of the human population for the next stage that they're planning. It's because they cannot cope with the numbers. And all we have to do, we don't have to fight them. We don't want to fight them. Fighting is about the last cycle that we're coming out of. We don't need to do that. We need to stop cooperating en masse with the control system, and the control system must fall because it's our acquiescence that's holding it together. And the great thing is that when you look at it from this higher perspective, there is no way in the world that this control system is going to control the lives of our children and grandchildren way into the future. It's not. Why? Because the energetic information construct on which it is based, this last cycle we're now very quickly ending, is disappearing. What we're seeing is the death throes. The death throes, the last panic, rat-cornered, thrashing out death throes of this system. And we just need to play it out and stay strong and not get caught in it, and go with this truth vibration wave of awareness transformation. And these guys are finished. They're finished. They may seem at this time to be at their strongest. They are finished. They're in their death throes. Okay.
Absolutely.
You hear me, guys? Okay.
Absolutely.
Death
row.
It's
yes,
over.
I myself can see that too. You know, I see these guys kind of getting squeamish, and they're kind of all this exposure and this vibration that's coming in, like you're talking about, is really pushing them to the point to where they're just trying everything they can to grab on and do whatever they can. And
yeah.
And it's absolutely amazing, this awakening that's going on. And I think they are about ready to be defeated, David.
It's exponential, though. The awakening is exponential, because the more that awaken, the more this energy is grounded in this human reality, and the more people awaken. Because awakening people are giving off this new vibration. They're then influencing other people who connect with it, and it just absolutely explodes. And there's going to come a point in the next few years, and I mean few years, not few decades, few years, when it's just going to go, what do they call it on the internet these days? It's going to go viral. And it is going viral. We're on that cusp now, and it's a wonderful time to be alive. And no more fear. No more. Let's finish with that. That's the old
Absolutely.
Cycle. Come on, right? Like lions
Absolutely.
After slumber. And this thing's going down.
Yep.
This is going down.
I'm with you 100%, David. In the short time we have left, I would like you to talk about some speeches you have coming up, where they're going to be located. And, I myself want to make it to one of your speeches. And, plug your website and let us know any details where we can find your book and all that good stuff.
Well, you can get the book through the website. It's literally in transit now, and you can pre-order it. And the interest in it has been absolutely phenomenal. The talks that I'm doing, and they're not so much speeches, they're presentations. I'm doing this year a completely updated presentation, bringing in all this new information. The first time I'm going to do it is in about a month from now at the Brixton Academy in London, 2,500 people. The tickets were gone 6 months in advance. This is the awakening we're talking about now. So much so, I'm doing another one actually on September the 11th, although we didn't choose that date. It chose us through when it was available. And I am going to use about 1,100 illustrations, and I talk in four sections over about 8 or 9 hours throughout a whole day. And the different sections are different elements of this, but it's a story. It's an unfolding, continuous story going through different elements of it, and then pulling it up at the end where I'm talking about the truth vibrations and all this other stuff in great detail. I'm going to be talking in America. I think it's in Chicago, and that's going to be in October. That's going to be on the 9th of November, is it? I think so. I'm trying to get my list up here, 30 seconds. I'm talking in Chicago anyway. I'm talking in San Francisco, and I'm talking for the first time in New York in that same period. And I don't know why, but I've talked all over America, but New York has never happened before. One or two people have said, can I bring you to New York? But it's never happened. And suddenly this year it has. Yeah, here it is. San Francisco is on October 23rd. New York is on October 17th. And Chicago is going to be the week before New York. I'm also speaking in Lisbon, Barcelona, Athens, Amsterdam and Prague as well. And really, you know, the interest is so much now that I could basically leave home and not back for a year. And I think 2011 looks like it's going to be like that. And that's brilliant because, you know, people say, do you ever take a break from it? You know, have you got anything else in your life? This is my life. This is what I do. I wake up in the morning and I'm at it, and I'm still at it when I go to bed, because you know, you have a job to do, and this is a time to do it. Everything else is additions and add-ons to me. My total focus is this, and you know, I wouldn't want to be anyone else doing anything else than me doing what I do. It's a privilege. It's an absolute. There are many, many challenges when you do this stuff, as many people know. But it's just wonderful now. I mean, it's been a real. Oh my goodness me, has it been a struggle sometimes in the last 20 years when you thought, what's the point? But now, it's such a joy to see this transformation taking place. To see people going, so I'm not just a piece of meat. So I'm not just that person I see reflected in the mirror. I'm something greater. Oh, something greater? Are you kidding? And we're starting to remember this. It's just a wonderful time.
Oh,
wonderful
yeah,
time to be alive.
Absolutely, David. I feel the same way, and that's why I started the Intel Hub. And you know, I'm just like you. I wake up every day and I'm at it. You know, and it gives me a really good feeling to know that. You know, I'm just doing what I like to do, and you know, it's getting the word out. So we really appreciate everything you do, David Icke. Everyone go to davidicke.com, visit his website. Of course, our website is theintelhub.com, and our blog is theintelhub.blogspot.com. Thank you, Jim, and we appreciate you on the Intel Hub.
It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you
very much.
Day, sir.
Thank you.